Not too bad, although I still, I said I get crazy.
All right, we'll come back to order. All right, at this time, Ms. Smith, call your next witness, please.
Yes, Carl Kostchek. Kostchek, sorry. I thought I had practiced. Carl Kostchek.
All right.
And before Mr. Kostchek starts, I just wanted to point out, there was a question about tax revenue payments, and I believe that Mr. Smith said it was in the application. It's on page 3-18 in section 3.6 of the application. It gives the tax revenue benefits to the locals.
Can you say that page again?
Sure. It's 3-18, and it's within section 3.6, economic considerations. And all the numbers, I think, are in the third paragraph after the bullet points.
Thank you, Ms. Smith, for that.
All right.
All right. Could you spell your name for the record, please?
Sure. My name is spelled Carl, K-A-R-L. My last name is Kostchek, spelled K-O-S-C-I-U-C-H.
And one more time, please pronounce it for me.
Kostchek.
Kostchek. All right. Thank you. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, go ahead, please.
Thank you. We've got this following. Could you state your full name for the record?
Carl Leonard Kostchek.
And by whom are you employed?
Tetra Tech.
And what's your business address?
My business address is 1750 Southwest Harbor Way, Portland, Oregon, 97201, but I currently live and work in Laramie, Wyoming.
And what's your position with Tetra Tech?
I am a senior biologist, and I also serve as a wind energy project manager.
And could you briefly describe your education and your work history?
Sure. I have a Bachelor's of Science degree from East Stroudsburg University in Pennsylvania. I have a Master's of Science degree in Wildlife and Fishery Sciences from Texas A&M University, and a doctorate degree from Kansas State University in biology.
And as far as your work history?
Sure. After finishing up graduate school in 2006, I was employed by Tetra Tech, and I've worked for them till the present.
And what is your role with respect to this particular project?
With this project, I provide overall guidance regarding wildlife studies and interpretation of regulations regarding wildlife. And today, I'll also be speaking about several other environmental studies, including cultural resources, wetlands, and noise.
And could you give us a general description of the project site from an environmental perspective?
Sure. As Patrick discussed earlier, the project site is primarily an agricultural wetlands matrix. In overall, it occurs in the ecoregion that's a transition between short grass and tall grass prairie. And overall, I think we've examined on the maps, the housing density is rather low for this, for the project area.
And what was the overall approach that was taken to environmental analysis of the project site?
Sure. First, you want to identify the environmental resources that might be affected by the project. The next step would be to review publicly available information in the context of regulations or just known issues for wind energy projects. The next step would be to discuss those resources with the appropriate agency if necessary, conduct field studies, and again return to agencies if necessary to review the results. And then the results are summarized and prepared in reports that you see in the exhibits.
And there were several environmental reports prepared for the project that were identified by Mr. Smith, and he discussed the shadow flicker report, so I'll just focus on the remaining reports that were not filed in the Certificate of Site Compatibility application, and we'll walk through each of those. If you'll look then at what has been marked as Exhibit 10, which is in our binders, can you identify that document for us?
Yes, Exhibit 10 is a technical memorandum for the cultural resources investigation.
And what was the purpose of the survey work that was done and described in the Cultural Resources Investigation Memo?
The information contained in this memo is the results of a what we call a Class 3 Cultural Resources Survey. This is a pedestrian survey. In other words, there are folks on the ground looking for specific resources. And the survey was conducted within what we call a survey corridor. This does differ from the project boundary that was discussed earlier. The survey corridor is a buffer around the predicted impacts of the project facilities, including the turbines, the transmission line, the collector lines, and the other facilities that have been described. And the objective was to evaluate if there would be direct impacts to cultural resources.
And from my recollection, as far as the survey corridor that was always wider or larger than the anticipated impacts of the facilities that were being studied for.
Yes, that's correct. There is a buffer on the impacts.
All right. And I believe that the survey corridor is discussed on page 3 of the report in Table 1.
Yes, the survey corridor is found in Table 1 on page 3 of the cultural report.
All right. What was the conclusion of the report, or of the survey work, I should say?
11 previously unrecorded archaeological sites were located within the survey corridor. 8 of those sites are farmsteads. 2 of the 11 sites are what are called artifact scatters. And one of the sites is an artifact scatter that is likely an old dump of the town of Courtney. Also, avoidance and minimization measures were proposed for 2 sites. One farmstead site monitoring is recommended during the construction process, and this is because the site has been disturbed by agricultural activities, and a monitor is recommended in the event that an artifact is unearthed. The monitor could investigate that artifact. There's also an avoidance of the old dump of the town of Courtney recommended within a 50-foot buffer around that site. I believe the facility proposed for this the Courtney Town Dump area, or what's presumed to be the Courtney Town Dump, is in a collection line, and there will be drilling that will result in it would go under the site, so the buffer would protect the site from any disturbances.
And so, just to clarify, of the 11 sites, only one, there's the one that needs to be monitored, doesn't need to be avoided.
That's correct.
It just needs to be monitored. And then there's the one that will be avoided.
Correct.
All right. I have, I would offer Exhibit 10.
No objection.
Exhibit 10 is admitted.
And then if you'll look at Exhibit 11, you identified that document for us.
Yes, Exhibit 11 is the architectural history investigation.
All right, and what is the purpose of this investigation?
The purpose of this investigation is to identify architectural properties that might be affected by the project. We consider this a Class 2 cultural survey. In other words, it's a reconnaissance level survey where the survey is limited to driving public roads and photographing or documenting properties that might be affected.
And what was the conclusion of the investigation?
Of the 26 locations and 33 properties identified by the SHPO within a 1-mile buffer of the turbines, so the scope of the Class 2 investigation was a bit broader than the Class 3, which I just described as taking place within a survey corridor. Of those 33 properties that were investigated, one was determined to have been previously eligible for the National Register of Historic Places, and 4 sites were determined to warrant further investigation.
All right, and as far as the further investigation and the eligibility of the one site, so we've got 5 sites total.
Correct.
I believe we talked about that during Mr. Smith's testimony, that there will be additional architectural work or investigative work done with respect to those properties to determine if any mitigation is required.
That's correct.
I offer Exhibit 11.
No objection.
Exhibit 11 is admitted.
If you'll turn to what's been marked as Exhibit 12 in the binder, can you identify that document for us?
Yes, this is the Wetlands and Waters Survey Report.
And And what's the purpose of a wetlands report or the survey work that was done associated with that report?
Sure. This is, again, a reconnaissance level survey performed within the survey corridor, as I described earlier, a buffer around the predicted impacts of the facilities. And the objective is to identify and determine, provide a general determination of the if the waters within the survey corridor are jurisdictional.
And what was the conclusion of the survey and the report?
In the survey corridor, all of the waters and wetlands features identified appeared to be isolated basins and would not fall under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. As Patrick mentioned earlier, the wetlands on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wetlands easements will be avoided, but there are approximately seven wetlands that would be permanently impacted.
And if you look at Table 2 on page 3 of the report, does that table discuss the recommendations and the comments as far as whether how difficult it would be to avoid different wetlands and the measures that have been taken or may be taken?
Yes.
I offer Exhibit 12.
No objection.
Exhibit 12 is admitted.
And then if you look at Exhibit 13, can you identify that document for us?
Exhibit 13 is the acoustic analysis.
And what's the purpose of an acoustic analysis?
The purpose is to determine if the sound generated from the project would meet the Commission's regulations and also comply with the Stutzman County Zoning Ordinance.
And what methodology was used for the assessment?
The project was modeled using acoustic modeling software, and all turbine locations were considered for all turbine types in the modeling effort. And in addition to those two parameters, there were other conservative measures built into the modeling. All turbine locations for all turbine types were modeled at what we consider maximum rotational speed, and also under what are considered anomalous weather conditions. And anomalous weather conditions simply means that weather conditions that would propagate sound further across the landscape. So another way to think of these are basically worst case scenarios when we look at the maximum rotational speed and the anomalous conditions.
And just so that I'm clear again, the report or this analysis is run using all of the potential sites, including alternatives for all turbine types?
That is correct.
And you have you updated the survey or the modeling work to account for the additional residents and the drop of turbine 45? That occurred after this report was filed with the commission?
Yes, the analysis has been updated.
And then if you look at, there's a sheet, there should be a sheet that's marked as 13 as well to go with this report. Can you describe what that is for us?
Sure. Exhibit 13 contains the updated acoustical monitoring accounting for the newly included residents and the removal of turbine 45, which has been discussed earlier.
All right. And what were the conclusions with respect to the modeling done on acoustics?
Sure. The Commission's regulations regarding acoustics or sound from the project is that there should not be an exceedance of 50 dBA. Accounting for the new residents and the removal of the one turbine 45, there were no exceedances for any of the turbine types that were noted either under maximum rotational or under anomalous weather conditions. The EPA limit of 48.6 dBA, which is on the Stutzman County Zoning Ordinance limit, there was one exceedance of an anomalous meteorological condition, and that was at the newly included residence. As Patrick has mentioned earlier, there are several options for dealing with the exceedance of Stutzman County's ordinance. They would include adjusting the turbine location slightly, but still within the survey corridor. They could include not using that turbine location, or they could include working with the landowner and obtaining a variance on the ordinance so that that turbine location can still be used.
All right. And going back, I think you talked about the Public Service Commission's standard, and just to clarify, you did apply the 50 dBA within 100 feet of an inhabited residence, is that right?
That is correct.
All All right, and so, and as far as the exceedance of Stutzman County, was that a significant exceedance of the standard?
No, it was not even one dBA above the 48.6 that the Stutzman County uses in their zoning ordinance.
Okay, so that's why you believe that a small shift in the turbine may be sufficient to address that issue, or one of the other options that you identified?
That's correct. Modeling would have to be conducted moving that turbine, but it's our acoustic expert's opinion that given the low-level exceedance of the ordinance, that it would not require a major shift in the turbine location to result in compliance.
Okay. And if we look, I offer Exhibit 14 or 13, including the supplement to that exhibit.
No objection.
Exhibit 13 is admitted.
And then if you'll look at what's been marked as Exhibit 14, can you identify that document for us?
Yes, Exhibit 14 is the 2013 Spring Avian Report.
And what is the purpose of conducting an avian survey such as is described in the report?
This avian report contains the results of several different types of surveys. It contains the results of point count surveys where birds are counted to evaluate the bird diversity and use of a wind project area. It contains the results of focal crane surveys to identify if crane species are moving through and if they might be roosting. And it also contains the results of a stick nest survey, which is used to document the location of breeding raptors.
All right. What conclusions were found as a result of this survey?
Given the project is a wetland agricultural matrix, we found birds that you'd expect in this environment. Primarily, the songbirds we found were blackbirds, such as grackles or red-winged blackbird, yellow-headed blackbird, and there were numerous waterfowl species detected. I believe Canada goose was one of the most frequently detected waterfowl species. Hawks and eagles in general are uncommon on the landscape, as there's really not a lot of habitat to support breeding populations of these animals, as they're stick nesters in trees.
And I believe there was a question earlier from Commissioner Kalk about the central flyway and then the migratory corridor. Is this project outside of the whooping crane migratory corridor?
Yes, it is.
And as far as the central flyway, do you have any input that you could provide on that?
Well, the project does fall within the central flyway. The central flyway is in the middle of the U.S., and it serves as a major migratory pathway primarily for waterfowl and shorebird species, such as sandpipers and other allies, and the project does fall within that area.
Considering all of those things, where it is located and within the central flyway and its location, was the conclusion that there would be a low risk to avian species?
Yes. Based on the types of birds that we found at the project area, it does represent, based on the 2013 Spring Avian Survey data, low risk overall.
And in addition to the formal studies that you just discussed, were any other key site analyses conducted?
Yes. As Patrick mentioned, a suite of analysis is conducted to examine suitability of the site. And I'll enumerate a demographic study, land use and managed land study, public services and existing infrastructure, health and human safety, recreational resources, land-based economies, soils, geology, and groundwater, surface water and floodplains, vegetation, and rare and unique natural resources. And each of these documents or resources topics is covered in the Certificate of Site Compatibility.
Okay, in the application.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then were there any other assessments done? We talked a little bit about earlier about an eagle nest in mm-hmm. the site. And could you talk with us and describe when the eagle nest was identified during the siting process and any steps that Courtney's planning to take as far as coordination with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on that particular issue?
Sure. I think it should be noted that Courtney has followed the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's land-based wind energy guidelines, and Patrick described the tiered approach that is used to start at the broader scale analysis and work down to site-specific studies. During the Tier 1 and Tier 2, the site did emerge as a low-risk site for wildlife in general. And part of the Tier 2 analysis identified species of regulatory concern, and those were addressed through either a desktop analysis or were further identified during field work. The Tier 3 studies, what we call Tier 3 studies, are what you basically see here in the spring avian surveys, where biologists are out on site collecting data to help inform the risk assessment for the project. Now, the spring avian survey report does contain information regarding a raptor nest survey that was conducted in late March, about March 26th. We try to get out there before trees have leaves on them in order to better spot raptor nests. One unoccupied stick nest was located during this survey. Subsequent to the raptor nest survey being conducted, a bald eagle nest was located on June 20th of this year. This eagle nest is believed, in my opinion, to be new this year based on the green vegetation incorporated into the nest. We don't have any evidence of breeding taking place at the nest. The nest was investigated during a four-hour observation earlier this year in June. There was no evidence of food delivery by the adult birds. There was no evidence of eagle nestlings in the area or fledged young, which are the same size as the adult except they're all brown. We did not have any evidence of reproduction. So it's likely that the nest was constructed late in the season. The pair did not breed, and they might be a new, inexperienced pair. Eagles will often have multiple nests in a territory, and they might not use the same nest every year. So it's possible this nest was constructed and not used in this year by the breeding pair.
And is it typical to find, where do they typically nest?
Bald eagles in particular associate with water. They're primarily aquatic, their prey is aquatic primarily. And I would consider an eagle nest being found in this area to be unexpected. In consultation with the Fish and Wildlife Service, they had no records of bald eagle breeding within 10 miles of the project area. And this was revealed during what I would consider Stage 2, Tier 2 / Tier 3 analysis for the project.
And as far as coordinating with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, what will that entail? What steps are to be taken next with respect to the eagle nest in the area?
As questions did reveal, Courtney has discussed with the Fish and Wildlife Service the presence of the eagle nest, and one option would be to pursue an eagle take permit under the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. This is not a required permit. This is a voluntary action a developer could take in regards to assessing risk to eagles.
And just to clarify, the Eagle Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, that's different from the Endangered Species Act, is that right?
That's correct. Bald eagle, due to a tremendous recovery over the last, I'd say, 30 years, was removed from the endangered species list, so it is not managed under what we call the ESA, but it is managed under the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, which does have a take provision, which, as Patrick mentioned, was written a rule in 2009.
We had some questions about an HCP, an incidental take permit. Could you talk in general about what an HCP is and how it relates to an incidental take permit?
Okay, a habitat conservation plan is prepared when an incidental take permit is applied for under what we call Section 10 of the Endangered Species Act, when there is a private lands only project. The federal government does not have to provide an approval. So a habitat conservation plan is developed to offset impacts to federally endangered species or threatened species. An incidental take permit would be applied for when there is high enough risk that a developer believes that take cannot be avoided. And again, that's exclusive to federally threatened or endangered species.
All right. And again, so that's not at issue with this particular project?
No. Through correspondence with the Fish and Wildlife Service and analysis conducted as part of the project, the likelihood of federally threatened or endangered species being impacted is low.
And to go back to the eagle nest issue and the coordination with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, there was a recommendation to contact the Migratory bird permit office in Denver to further discuss this matter. Does the company intend to do that?
Yes, that is correct. The recommendation was provided, and yes, that is the intention to follow up with the Migratory Birds Office.
All right. So 1 second to make sure I haven't missed something that we needed to follow up with you. I think that's all that I have. Is there any other information that you would like to provide to the commission at this time?
No.
All right, I have no further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong or Mr. Mean?
Mr. Kostrick, how is this communication with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the eagle nest expected to end?
The
migratory. If I don't cover, you can
the Migratory Bird Agency.
Sure. The Fish and Wildlife Service has provided a recommendation for us to work further with their experts in regards to eagles in Colorado. The intention is to follow up with those individuals and determine their recommendations and suggested next steps.
Any idea how long that's supposed to be?
The correspondence, the intention is to correspond with them over the next few weeks.
Is that a back and forth type of thing of how to deal with it, or do you have any idea what they're going to recommend? I mean, what are your thoughts or expectations of what's going to happen?
Given the framework and the regulatory environment that an eagle take permit is available, the conversation will likely involve the Fish and Wildlife Service providing guidance and their opinion of the potential effects of the project on eagles and suggesting avoidance and minimization measures. The actions to follow the guidance and the avoidance and minimization measures are voluntary. So after the recommendations are provided, Courtney Wind will take into consideration those recommendations provided by the service.
Do you, in the application on the maps, it says there's six waterfall production areas within a mile mm-hmm. of the project site. What is a waterfall production area?
A waterfall production area is an area that is valuable to the production. It's breeding grounds for ducks, simply put.
And that's part of the central flyway.
Yes, sir.
What impact is expected on the breeding ground for ducks as a result of this wind farm?
Based on the evidence that has emerged from numerous post-construction monitoring studies for wind energy projects, waterfowl will nest within areas in close proximity to turbines. I've done a lot of investigation regarding the fatality of birds at wind energy projects, and what we find is that waterfowl, ducks and geese, tend not to collide with turbines because they fly in the day and they are looking where they're going. As far as the what we would consider indirect effects of wind energy on waterfowl, if the ground is not disturbed, the waterfowl production area should be undisturbed. And as somebody who enjoys waterfowl hunting, I can conclude that the waterfowl production areas will likely be unaffected by the development of the project outside of those areas.
Are there any steps taken during construction to schedule around, I don't know, maybe sensitive breeding times of the year or anything like that that's been recommended?
As Courtney has stated, they will be developing a bird and bat conservation strategy, and those are the exact types of measures that would go into what's called the BBCS. So the BBCS includes a summary of the evaluation of wildlife resources, and it also includes avoidance, minimization, and best management practices.
Sure, and I understand that. What I've also understood is whether to follow them or not is voluntary. I mean, is it the intent to mitigate any of those potential effects by scheduling construction around breeding times or sensitive times when it might affect these areas?
I cannot comment on the construction practices that will be used, but I can say that those measures would be considered in development of a BBCS. And I would defer to Mr. Smith to answer any of those questions more definitively regarding the avoidance and minimization measures.
What other impacts to wildlife could there be as a result of this project?
Bird fatalities could occur. Birds strike all sorts of anthropogenic features. And I think given the wetland agricultural matrix nature of the project area, we are unlikely to see displacement effects. And I think that the primary effects would be limited to collision mortality.
You said you've been involved in, I don't know if you limited it to ducks, but you were involved in some of the, you know, evaluating fatalities at other wind farms. What is there kind of a average amount of fatalities, or like any way to determine how many fatalities you could expect for this wind farm?
Looking at the suite of data that's available, what we tend to find, and when you do a data synthesis or meta-analysis of all this data, is that the fatalities really vary regionally. Areas out east tend to have higher bat fatality rates due to the forested ridges in the Appalachian Mountains. And I think in general, the fatalities would be limited to thinking broadly in the context of the project. I would hesitate to provide a metric on this, because there might not be comparable data available from other studies. I could say that other projects in the country have observed 2 or 3 birds per megawatt, but how that would translate to this project area without comparable data, I really couldn't reach that conclusion.
That 2 or 3 birds per megawatt over how
per
long?
Year.
And you'd mentioned that this was determined to be a low-risk project as far as wildlife impacts, or was that for just birds?
Regarding the data in the spring avian surveys, but the Tier 2 analysis did not reveal any other potential wildlife resources that could negatively be affected.
What I'm wondering is what low risk qualifies as? You know, what does it take to be low risk?
Low risk would be there are not large tracts of contiguous native habitat in terms of breeding value to grassland birds or birds of fragmentation concern. Looking at the list of state-sensitive wildlife in North Dakota, North Dakota does not have an endangered species law. They have a list of 100 birds of conservation priority. Looking at the birds that were observed on that list and their potential to be affected, based on what we know about wildlife impacts and wind energy, the species that are found are unlikely to be affected.
You heard Mr. Smith's testimony about the different types of turbines being considered. Is there different effects or potential effects to wildlife depending on which one is selected?
Given the size of these turbines and the scale at which we are dealing, the incremental small changes in the rotor diameter are not likely to have an effect that can really be analyzed.
And this may be more curiosity than anything, but there is some comments in some of the reports about at-risk flight behavior for birds. Is that what you were discussing with the ducks and watching where they fly,
mm-hmm.
I guess?
Yes, sir.
What would be, what flight behavior causes a risk, I guess? And is it consistent with the types of birds in this area?
There's typically weather conditions that will correlate with bird fatalities. And what we find from the studies on communication towers, lighted communication towers with a specific type of lighting in specific weather conditions can affect nocturnal migratory birds. So the songbirds that are flying at night will often be attracted to the lighting on communications towers and strike the guy wires. There was a study recently about 2 years ago prepared by Paul Kerlinger that showed that the type of lighting used on the wind turbines does not affect birds and they are not attracted to it. And the types of at-risk flight behaviors that you were referring to are typically thought of by those exhibited by soaring hawks, for example. birds that are looking down while foraging and using a behavior we call kiting, where they are in the air, they're looking for food, and they're not necessarily paying attention to where they're going. Birds like waterfowl tend to be at lower risk because they're flying in a straight line looking directly ahead. So the water birds associated with the wetlands here tend rarely to show up in the fatality studies, and even where there are projects overlapping the range of these species, because they exhibit behaviors that make them more risk-averse than compared to a raptor like a red-tailed hawk that might be soaring and not necessarily focused on the turbine. It's looking for something to eat.
Is that, I guess, one of the reasons why the eagle becomes a concern in the project area? Because it's a foraging or it hunts while it's flying?
Well, that's a really good question. And bald eagles, there's only, I believe, 5 documented bald eagle fatalities at wind energy projects in North America. Bald eagles should really be distinguished in their risk profile from golden eagles. Golden eagles occurring in the western U.S., from where I am in Wyoming, and west of there. Golden eagles are mammal hunters. They're interested in killing and eating something. Bald eagles, primarily, they're looking for carrion, dead things, or they might try to grab a duck or a turtle. So bald eagles are at much lower risk from disturbance and collision risk with wind turbines because they're really paying attention to where they're at. They do not tend to exhibit that higher risk kiting behavior. They don't come up over ridges and enter the rotor swept area. They basically say, there's a duck over there I'm going to go eat, and they fly to it. So bald eagles are regulated, and because of the regulation, it's going to be addressed. But they are at lower risk, and we found that working with the Fish and Wildlife Service, the risk profile of bald eagles is much lower than the golden eagle, the species in the western U.S.
That's all the questions that I
have. I was looking at Exhibit 6, and there was an email there then with the recommendations from Fish and Wildlife on this eagle. And there were 2 recommendations there. One that said that since the project may fall under Category 1 of the ECP guideline, we recommend that the project be redesigned to at least meet the Category 2 criteria. What does that mean?
Category 1 project, referring to the Eagle Conservation Plan guidance, is a project that is considered a high-risk site. Project 2 is a more moderate risk site with opportunity for mitigation. I would like to qualify this letter in that this comes from Heidi Riddle, Fish and Wildlife Service biologist, who has referred us to an office that is more qualified than she is to reach this conclusion. So although this is an initial assessment, we haven't really provided the service with the data. The individuals in the service to make this determination have not received the project-specific information.
Okay, so what does redesign mean?
Redesign would mean to, and again, this is limited to this communication, but the service could provide recommendations to reduce risk to eagles through several measures.
Is there something you can provide, like a late file exhibit that would show how this matters, what comes out of the Migratory Birds Office?
I have one hesitation in that there's no requirement that this be resolved in a certain manner. So, I mean, we would be happy to provide whatever we have at the time that we file the other late filed exhibits, but I wouldn't want to hold up the whole process based on some outcome because there is no required outcome. So,
are you going to file something then as a late filed exhibit?
Why don't we say that we'll file an update as an update on the situation for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the same time as we file 15, 16, and 17, so this would be 18?
Right. And what are we going to call this?
Update on U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service correspondence.
All
Bruce's office.
Concerning, if, yeah, sure, concerning migratory bird office communications.
Any other questions, Mr. Lean?
I think that's good for me, thank you.
Okay, so that will be Exhibit 18, all right. I'm going to, at this time, ask the commissioners for their questions. Commissioner Paul?
Thank you, Your Honor. Carl, thank you for your enthusiastic testimony. I appreciate that. We get a lot of folks to come in here and talk about bugs and bunnies, and you've got some good background in it. So.
Thank you.
Just really only have two questions. One is, how often does the wetlands delineations studies change? We've had extremely wet seasons in North Dakota. Does the Corps redefine wetlands every year, every 2 years, every 3 years? Because, you know, the hydric soils and all that. I mean, a wetland today might be differently defined than it was 5 years ago because we've been so wet. How does that change?
I would really have to defer that to a wetlands professional.
Okay, it was more of a background question, I guess. I didn't have it tied to this project, so.
Oh, my experience it revolves in the familiarity with the results of the studies and the regulatory implications. How the Corps deals with that in each of their Corps districts, I'm not familiar with. I would have to refer that to somebody who is more qualified to answer that question.
In your discussion with the Corps, there's no disagreement in anything you guys have done here, so I don't think it's an issue for this particular project. I was just trying to get some background. And then the last question I had is just more of a personal note. Understanding that the majority of the commission is North Dakota State graduate, you're from Kansas State, who plays them in football the first game of the year. Do you have a preference in the outcome of that game?
Off the record, I'm interested to see how the Wildcats perform now that Colin Klein is not their quarterback. He was really the machine behind that team last year.
Thank you, Carl.
You bet.
Thank you, Commissioner Paul. Commissioner Chrisman.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't know if I missed the point of the five potential historic registry sites. So they're potential sites, and so can you not build a wind turbine within a certain distance of a historic site? Or if there's a wind turbine there, does that mean that that could not be developed into a historic site later? Or what's the correlation between these potential sites and this project?
The broader implications of having a potentially eligible site would be indirect effects. In other words, potential visual effects. How that influences the eligibility of the site or the effects of the project will be discussed with SHPO. SHPO will provide recommendations and determine if mitigation is needed for these potentially eligible sites. And as Molly mentioned earlier, SHPO concurrence letters will be submitted with the late filed exhibits.
No clear rule of thumb, though, that, oh, if that's within a quarter of a mile, they're out of it or something like that. It's a bigger decision process than that. Huh?
Yes, it will be, and the SHPO concurrence letters will be transmitted. So we're looking for that full concurrence from SHPO.
Okay, Exhibit 13.
Yes, sir.
Sound.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at, you know, all four types at the maximum rotational column. And they vary which has more in each category.
Yes.
But generally, they kind of balance out. There's about the same number in the 35 to 40 category as the 40 to 45, as the 45 to 50. Why would I not be suspicious then that in that 45 to 50 category, they're almost all in the very bottom of that, and the top third of that category, which would put them over the EPA and Stutzman County line, there's only one out of all those. That just seems odd.
These are the results of the modeling. Maximum rotational is all turbines at all positions operating at maximum rotational speed. What you're looking at is a quantitative approach, and if there are no results greater than 50, that is what was returned by the acoustic modeling. And if there is further clarification needed on the acoustic modeling, we could follow up with that. But these are the quantitative results of the analysis.
It seems more logical to me if the answer were that, well, you know, there were some more, and we adjusted them slightly to get it down below that 48.6, but maybe it's just coincidence.
Too good to be true, Commissioner.
I'm not understanding the question. So I just want to make sure I'm understanding so we're responding appropriately.
Well, if you look at the three categories, from 35 to 40, mm-hmm. 40 to 45, and 45 to 50, mm-hmm. in each of the maximum rotational categories,
sure.
there's, you know, roughly, say, a dozen in each category mm-hmm. for each model. Mm-hmm. But the dozen in the 45 to 50 category are almost, with the one exception of one turbine, 48.6 or less, mm-hmm. nothing goes from 48.7 to 50. That just seems...
Yeah, and if incredible. I'm understanding, that's just the...
Those are the results.
That's the data.
Lucky. I have nothing further.
Thank you. Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchik?
Just to follow up a little bit on Commissioner Christman's comments, on the sound issue, I was looking at the table, it's on page 8 of the sound study, where it goes through and shows the homes and the sound levels at each of the homes under each of the scenarios for the various turbines. And I looked at the ones that were closest to 50 or 48. What is the Sussman County?
48.6.
48.6. So the ones that I highlighted, five of them, receptor number 7, 8, 15, 22, and 32, as being up there on the upper end. All of them except for number 7 have signed. So that seems significant to me. Number 7 is not signed on to the project, and they have a level on the second scenario there that's just barely under the acceptable level at 48.4. Is there any effort by the company to get a variance from them on the front end so that our experience tells us that sometimes the levels do go higher, even though they don't show up on the study, so that you have that in place before this is the project is in the ground, and then it gets a lot harder to mitigate it after that.
I would defer that question to Mr. Smith.
Okay. And then on one other sound, more technical question, just for my background. The sound level, and this is on page 2 of that study, the sound level of these towers is quite high at the tower, 104.7. That chart there shows what the decibel level is. And I'm assuming that's basically at the tower site. Is it just distance that it tails off that much and becomes acceptable? Or you get... you know, from 104 decibels down to below 50, just 100 feet away?
That is a very good question for our acoustics experts, as there are other landscape level effects that are accounted for when sound propagates across the landscape. And I think to best explain that, I would defer that to Tricia.
Okay. That would be great. Okay, so that's all of my questions for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I do have a couple follow-ups.
Ms. Smith?
And you can tell me if this should also be deferred to Tricia as well, but the acoustic analysis looks at a worst-case scenario situation. Is that right?
That is correct, because all turbine locations are included, and maximum rotational is used, and there is also a 2 dBA confidence standard deviation applied to the modeling. And so you're actually assuming that all turbines are operating at their maximal speed at all locations. And I think Tricia can provide some more information about how sound can be propagated across the landscape in terms of multiple turbine situations, when why using all turbines is a worst case.
And just the reason I ask is because there is a question about the chart in Table 8 where it's showing, hey, there's this residence, it looks like it's very, very close to the level. That is assuming a worst case scenario plus including this 2 dBA deviation.
Yes, that's included in the modeling.
All right. So the likelihood is that it would be less than that that amount. That's what we expect the maximum to be, but it would likely be less.
Yes, and that's what we try to account for in the modeling, is the maximum sound output from the project based on the information we've received from the manufacturer.
And again, using all turbine locations, and which would not be used for all... any of the turbines, in fact, would not use all 136 turbine locations.
That is correct.
All right. I don't have any other questions.
Mr. Armstrong, any follow-up? Mr. Lean?
I don't know if we should save this for the sound expert or not, but at what distance from the receptor, from the building, are we talking about making these modeling points? It says... For instance, our ordinance says that you should be 50 dBA or less at a distance of 100 feet from the receptor. And if I read the zoning ordinance right, it said 48.6 at 50 feet.
Yeah. So, and that's what was done, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so when we look at the chart here, and it says, like in number 7, we had the 48.4. Is that at a distance of 100 feet from the residence?
Which exhibit are you looking at, Mr. Lean? Identify.
Exhibit 6.
6?
Yeah, table A1.
Oh, yes, sir. That is at the distance of 100 feet from the residence, according to the Commission's regulations on sound.
50 feet, it might be a different, lesser number.
Yes.
It's further from the turbine.
It's further from the turbine, yes.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Commissioners, do you have any more questions?
I'm up for this one, I hope.
Just for the record, identify what it means, what is a take permit?
A take permit in the context of the Endangered Species Act is a permit issued by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the authorized incidental take of a federally threatened or endangered species. Under the Endangered Species Act, you cannot harm, kill, pursue, attempt to harm, hunt an endangered species, but the Endangered Species Act allows for the limited authorized take of those species. So it could be the direct take, or it could be a harassment take.
So something to, in this case, get the eagle to relocate, or to actually take it and relocate it, or to kill it?
Well, under the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, an eagle take permit is available. And yes, the take permit under the Eagle Act could allow for the direct mortality of bald eagles.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchik.
What happens, I understand you can get the incidental take permit, and they're not recommending that they do that because it's very low probability that would happen. So what happens if there's take, an accidental one? Can they get fined? Or if the U.S. Fish and Wildlife says you don't need it, do they say, okay, we told you you didn't need it, so now we aren't
going to
find you?
I can't speak for the service on that issue. What I can say from my experience is that the good faith effort demonstrated by Courtney and all the coordination and following the tiers indicates that the site is low risk. If an anomalous event happens and unfortunately an endangered species shows up as a mortality at the wind project, the service has exercised prosecutorial discretion in past cases. And I think working with Courtney Wind to develop measures in their bird and bat conservation strategy might be something that would be recommended. But I do not see this is a high-risk site where Courtney is going forward in the with data suggesting that endangered species could occur.
Thank you. Any further questions of this witness from Ms. Smith, Mr. Armstrong, Commissioner? Thank you. You're excused.
Thank you.
Did you offer Exhibit 14?
If I didn't, I should have, so I offered.
I don't have it checked on. Thank you. Exhibit 14 is admitted. All right. Are you going to be calling another witness?
I believe there was a question about the sound level, so we'll call Tricia Pellerin.
To stand for questions?
Yeah, for that particular question.
For the records, your name, please.
Patricia Catherine Pellerin.
And spell the last name.
P-E-L-L-E-R-I-N.
All right, please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Smith, did you want to ask something first? I believe Mr. Lean had questions.
I think we may have answered Mr. Lean's, but I know Ms. Fedorchak had a question. But I think before we do that, we better at least establish you're with Tetra Tech, is that right?
I am.
And can you give us your background as far as education and work history?
Yes, I have my bachelor's and master's degrees in chemical and biochemical engineering from the University of Western Ontario. Then I worked in an environmental consulting company called Jake Swetford in Nova Scotia, Canada, and I now, starting as of 2007, I started working with Tetra Tech, who I'm currently with as an acoustic engineer as well.
All right, and so you said you're working as an acoustic engineer, so you have the background to address some of the questions we've heard today.
I do.
All right, so I would defer to Ms. Fedorchak.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Excellent. Tricia, I didn't want you to waste your time. Come all this way.
Oh, that's okay.
Share your wisdom with us.
Sure.
My question was the sound levels that are recorded at the site are exceeding 100 decibels, and then when they get out, 50 feet from the house or 100 feet from the house, they're much, much lower. So tell me how does that happen in the broad open prairie? How would you account for that significant of a decrease in decibels?
Sure. The sound levels that you mentioned at the wind turbine, referred to as the sound power, which I kind of liken to the wattage of a light bulb, so kind of at the source, may seem relatively high, but are consistent with wind turbines of similar size. And as Carl mentioned, we use CADNA, which is an acoustic modeling program, which takes into account attenuation with distance, but other things as well, including reflection, from the ground, screening from topography. We import site-specific topography into the model, meteorological conditions, ground absorption as well. You can account for things like foliage and buildings, but we ignore that as an added conservatism to our assessment. But those are mainly the factors that it kind of contribute to the propagation and attenuation of sound from the source to the receivers.
I'm not saying it's going to work, but if it did exceed at some point the recommended level, are there mitigation efforts that can be undertaken to do anything about it?
There are mitigation options. However, as Mr. Kostick suggested, we do include many conservatives in the model to, kind of avoid that, avoid the need to mitigate. Not only was the 2 dB safety factor included, but and also modeling all of the wind turbine locations, even though they will not all be used. We also assume maximum rotation of all wind turbines at the same time, which is not typical. And we also, the model itself, it follows the ISO standard, which is widely accepted by acousticians and engineers alike. And it assumes basically an omnidirectional downwind propagation, which means that the wind is going downwind from the wind turbine towards the receiver or house, you know, the receptor, whatever you're talking about, in every direction simultaneously, which could never physically happen. You know, either wind is going one direction or the other. But this assumes then, you know, let's say there's a receiver in the middle of a couple of wind turbines, that all the sound is going directly to that house. So whereas, you know, typically in the upwind direction, the sound would be lower, but we kind of assume that. So while mitigation is available, we really take all factors into consideration to try to kind of have a worst case assessment.
And have you worked with wind farms extensively? You have quite a bit of experience.
Yes.
Sound and wind farms.
Yes.
Is this a good threshold in your opinion? Tell me what you think the 50 decibels or 48.6 in terms of conservative, a little too liberal, your professional opinion of that sound standard?
I mean, it's not my job to dictate criteria. I would say it's fairly consistent with other criteria I've seen around the country, and I've conducted assessments in you know, probably at least 25 states. So I'd say, I wouldn't say it's particularly liberal, or I'd say it's fairly consistent. It's a good.
In your experience, is this level quite tolerable for the people living within it?
That's kind of a subjective question. You know, all I can really speak to is that I do find it's consistent criteria. You know, it's 48.6. The EPA study itself, they came up with that criterion from conducting many. It's like the largest database of noise community studies that has ever been conducted, and they found that to be an adequate criterion within, you know, quite a large margin of safety. To, you know, for the public to, you know, feel comfortable with. So, you know, I find it's a good criterion in terms of doing assessments, and it's fairly, you know, commonly used.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Patricia. Commissioner Podorchak really opened up some good line of questions there. I just wanted to get straight in my mind again, though. The EPA threshold for noise, it's a guideline, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so, but I've heard so many different numbers. I've heard 65 for one thing for the EPA and 50 for another thing. There's just a whole bunch of numbers that get thrown around with what the levels are. Can you maybe educate me again on the 48.6 EPA? What does that particular guideline say?
It actually, when you read the guideline itself, that is what they deem, it is actually written as a 55 LDN,
okay,
which is a day-night, it's the day-night sound level. That's what LDN stands for, in A-weighted decibels. And that's what they deem to be an acceptable level for residential uses outdoors.
Okay.
However, a 55 LDN, what an LDN means is that there's been an adjustment for nighttime sound levels, a penalty, if you will, because, you know, those are the more sensitive hours when people might be sleeping. But when we model noise, we model at what would be determined as a maximum sound level. It's not averaged, it's kind of worst case, a maximum instantaneous sound level. So to translate the 55 LDN to something you would want to compare from, let's say, modeling results like we did, you have to subtract a 6.4 dB to kind of it,
okay,
which translates to a 48.6 limit.
That makes sense, because we've had a lot of discussion in this session about noise for a lot of different things.
Sure.
What is the threshold for, EPA does have a threshold for safety, like ocean safety?
Yes.
Do you know what that is off the
top? For instance, at limits for construction sites and things like that, I believe it's 70 dBA. Yes.
And then Mr. Lane asked the question, and the previous witness said the modeling was done at 100 feet.
Yes.
And didn't I understand the local ordinance is at 50 feet?
That's right. But we figured we should present results at the kind of more conservative distance. So that was at the 100 feet.
But in your discussion with the local authorities in Sutton County, are they happy with what you've done with this modeling to meet their standard?
Have
you heard any concerns from them that they're are they okay with what you've done?
I have not personally, but I would have to defer maybe to Mr. Smith.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Chrisman, did you have a follow-up?
I do, just one. In discussions on other issues, we've had some people come to us and say it's not so much the decibels, it's the pitch at which we're hearing those decibels. And one sound might be fairly pleasant and you really don't even notice it, and another sound might not be so pleasant. Mm-hmm. In your professional experience that you brought up in working in nearly half the states, are other entities distinguishing between various pitches or tones in deciding how many decibels is acceptable?
There are entities. Do you mean regulatory entities? Do they? Okay. In general, I would say no. I have encountered, for instance, in the state of Illinois, they have a regulation which has limits according to octave band frequency, whereas the limits, for instance, that are applicable to this project are in A-weighted broadband decibels, which that accounts for all frequencies in total. But I would say that's atypical to have limits which are by octave band frequency.
Do you think this project would meet those standards? Or, I mean, is this like a problematic pitch, or is this one that should be kind of fine? The Illinois standards.
There's nothing to indicate in the modeling results that there would be any issue on a frequency basis, and certainly, I mean, it complies with the limits that are applicable to the project, and that was really, you know, the scope of my work.
Commissioner Fedorchuk,
you've talked a lot about modeling. If you were to come in and do an actual sound study, is the methodology such that, say, we've got this 50 dBA standard, that they would be out of compliance if they ever went over it ever? Or is there some sort of average that is calculated that it has to be on average lower? So, you know, in terms of actual sound.
Mm-hmm. Well, the modeling we do is based on maximum, so it's not based on an average level.
But if you were to come back and do an actual sound study on site after the turbines are in mm-hmm. place, and so you're not modeling what should happen, you're actually recording what is happening.
Well, I have
in
to.
In that scenario, do you throw out the highs and the lows and take the average, or do you take it can't ever exceed the 50?
I see. I have done studies like that, operational studies, to verify modeling results and sound power specifications. And it's a methodology that's dictated by the International Electrotechnical Commission. It's very laid out. You have to take so many measurements to get the kind of statistical significance to show that that a certain value is typical at a certain wind speed. So they do try to do it in such a way that, you know, it really captures what is representative of what the wind turbine is producing. It's kind of a complicated methodology, but that kind of involves, you know, turning the wind turbine on and off many times and over quite a number of different measurements. So I would not say it's an average because they make you actually take the, I think it's about the 95th percentile confidence level or something like that. So they require that you knock out kind of lower level, kind of get that most representative chunk.
And I'm asking this because I think think it's important for the public to understand, people living there, that they can't take their little sound devices out and one time catch this being higher than 50 and then say they're out of compliance, that this is not, and so I think that's an important distinction, because if I were a member of the public seeing that this is, you know, oh, well, 50, and then if they're ever, if I think it's too loud, I'm going to look for the times that they're 50 and say they're out of compliance, they have to fix this.
Sure, and the modeling itself represents, you know, the project contribution. It doesn't include ambient sound levels that are, you know, existing there now. So if you were to just take a reading, the sound level, you know, sure, there could be some from the wind turbine, but some from ambient as well. You'd have to extract that information.
We do our best here to, you know, set a standard that's going to be comfortable for people, but there's a lot of factors that come into play in reality with the sound.
Sure.
It gets kind of complicated.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you for your expertise. I really appreciate
hearing
from you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions? Ms. Smith?
I don't think so.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Comes from a very beautiful area in Canada. All right. Any other witnesses, Ms. Smith?
I don't believe so. And there were questions about some of the various questions amongst the commissioners about the different information on who's participating, who's not participating in situation. We'd like to submit a late filed exhibit. We think it'd be easier to explain and capture all of that data if we have a little bit of time to put that together, as opposed to try to do it today. It would be rather hodgepodge. So that would be late filed exhibit.
And that's
19.
Acceptable, commissioners?
Absolutely.
Okay, that would be 19.
Okay.
And what are we going to call this?
Should we just call it late filed 19 exhibit regarding participating versus non-participating landowners?
That sounds very good.
Participating versus non-participating landowners. All right.
Yeah. Can I have a comment on that?
Yes, Commissioner Christman.
No, Ms. Smith. When you're putting those together, you know, there were the various reasons that Mr. Smith mentioned why someone might not be participating. Maybe the title can't be cleared up or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then when we get to people who just choose not to participate, mm-hmm. If it has to do, I don't know if this is very good terminology, but it's the ones that come to mind, so I'll throw them out. I can see kind of two distinct reasons between some of these potential landowners. One being kind of quality of life, someone who just lives out there and they want it to stay as it is. The others would be those who have that reason plus their agriculture interests. And so on these non-signings, if you could somehow, you know, pick an acreage or something, or whether if there's some way to identify whether they're substantial landowners or actively participating in agriculture or something like that, and have the ag issues as opposed to just the quality of life for their home.
Okay, I think
is that
what
possible
we,
to differentiate?
Yeah, I think what we're thinking is we have the parcels that are unsigned. We would reference the land by landowner, the parcels, and deal with them in that way, and we can in that address your issue. Yep.
Anything else on that, commissioners?
I just did. I would envision the late filed exhibits and having a work session, and we'll just have to see where it goes, and there may be more documents that are requested after that too.
Okay. That comprise then Courtney Wind Farm's presentation of its case?
It does. We would reserve the right to have rebuttal if there's any needed after the public testimony.
Nope. Okay. All right.
You'd say yes.
Are we ready to open it up, or do you need another break, commissioners? Shall we just press
we'll
on?
Let the public say their piece.
All right. All right, you've waited a long time out there, and I know some of you want to come forward and give some testimony. I think maybe a couple people came in after I explained that all witness testimony is taken under oath, and is subject to penalties for perjury. And by law, I'm required to inform witnesses about those penalties. Perjury in the state of North Dakota is a Class C felony. It is punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, maximum 5 years in prison, or both. And at this time, you know, you'll all have a chance, so it doesn't matter who goes first. So if and this is for you to come up and tell the commission, you know, what you have to say on this, either in support or opposition to this application.
Nobody wants to go first. I thought the mayor would be first.
Good afternoon.
My name?
Lee Andrew Dick.
Lee Andrew Dick. Spell the last name.
D-I-C-K.
All right, thank you. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
All right. Go ahead.
I guess I'm representing a few groups. Number one would be I am the Courtney Township Clerk. I am representing landowners in the footprint. I am also the president of Courtney Wind Farmers LLC Board of Directors. I guess the benefits of the wind farm, I'm going to start out with the Courtney Wind Farmers LLC. They have offered, Geronimo Energy has offered the landowners the opportunity to invest in the development of the wind farm. Came up with a 10% cost, or 10% of the development cost is what we came up with. We met that. We raised the money. We have it. There's approximately 15 investors. I have lists. I did not bring it with. All of them are landowners or live real close to the footprint. There is nobody that lives in Texas. The financial gains we have to make from this are, I think, very tremendous. It's a great opportunity, and that is one of the reasons that Geronimo has had such warm reception in the community, because of the programs they're putting out like this. That, and I feel, I have talked to people from the wind farm over by Cooperstown, like you were talking about. The part of the problem, what I've gathered over there talking to them people, is this guy got a tower, this guy didn't. Geronimo has, in my mind, solved that problem when they came in and they said, if your 160 acres are in the footprint and you are signed up, you will get a per acre payment. And they have reduced the tower payment, so to speak. I guess it's, everybody gets a share. Everybody gets a piece of the pie. And that's how they do it. And I think it's a great idea. It's good. It's good for everybody. As far as the township goes, we are definitely looking forward to any improvements they will make on our roads. And we all know they will have to make improvements on our roads. I am a landowner and a farmer inside of the foot, right in the heart of the footprint. I have reservations about farming around wind towers and access roads, but I feel the financial gains far outweigh the hassles. I will have no problem doing it. Things like this don't necessarily happen in a small town, North Dakota, every year. You don't get a lot of opportunities like this in these small towns. Touching a little bit on the unsigned landowners, I'm not trying to speak for them by any means, but a lot of the land that is not signed up in this footprint is people that don't even live here. They don't live anywhere close, some of them. I farmed some of the ground that's not signed up, and the landowner told me he got out of, he had a the PLOTS program. He had that contract on it. He just got out of that contract, and he just does not want to tie it up with anything anymore. Just doesn't want to deal with the mail, the hassle, and everything that goes with it. So, and it's just a personal decision. Fine. He realizes that he's not going to get a payment. I have some economic impact numbers, and these were given to me by Geronimo. Tax impacts and stuff like that. In the development phase, about $65,000 a year in payments is going to landowners for the leases.
Can I interrupt you there for one second?
Yeah, yeah.
Total, or
I believe
like
it is total.
Section, or?
No, I believe it is total in the footprint. That is, I guess I don't know what you'd call it, but without having the paperwork in front of me, it's just a per acre lease for the development. Gives them the right to go out there and do their studies and all the stuff that happens. I got some notes, but they're not great. After development, after construction, $1.1 million to landowners for leases and turbines for the per acre and the towers. $1.1 million to the landowners. The tax revenue, school district is $9.2 million over 20 years.
Could you repeat that?
$9.2 million. School district is $9.2 million over 20 years. The county is $6.5 million over 20 years. And the townships, and I'm not real clear, I was going to ask this question to them guys today, but I haven't, if this is just the townships in the footprint or if this is all the townships in the county, it's $1.5 million in 20 years. And the fire district is $354,000 over 20 years. They also, I think somebody touched on the community fund. Is $40,000 a year, and I know a little bit about it. I don't know a lot about it, but it goes to the community, and there's a board that decides what to be done with this. The 10 full-time employees and 180 construction jobs.
Ms. Smith?
I don't have any questions.
Mr. Armstrong? Mr. Lean?
No questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Yes, Your Honor.
Commissioner Call.
Thank you, Lee, for coming forward and testifying and sitting here all day to get to this. The way the law lays out, the company goes first and just the way it goes.
You bet.
And we've had a lot of discussions about that first, but I think it's the best way because then the company has a chance to put out all their viewpoints and hopefully it can help answer some of it. But, you know, a lot of the things that you're talking about and the questions I had really don't have much to actually do with our siting, just some lessons learned and concerns. And, you know, you being involved with the Courtney Wind Farmers LLC, you know, I think it's a good idea as long as everything goes okay. Because the Cooperstown Wind Farm, that was quite a hearing. And there's been some things that we've learned because of that. We've also had cases where there's been groups that have tried to form LLCs to start wind farms, and people put in a lot of their own money, and the wind farm was not built, and people were left holding the bag. So, I mean, that's...
Part of what qualified you to be an investor was you had to be accredited, and I think that's kind of where you're going.
But it wasn't so much that the people themselves put the money, it was they invested in the company, not this particular company, but the company never followed through. So there is a risk that if the project doesn't get approved, I hope the investors know that this is money, that there's no guarantee if it's not built.
Yep. We made this very clear to every investor. In fact, we had a meeting in Courtney at the town hall And we said, this is riskier than putting your money in the stock market. It is 10 times riskier than putting your money in the stock market.
But that being said, every wind farm that we've had in the state that I've been involved in, we've had issues, but we've always been kind of able to work through them. I guess the last thing I would say is that you talked about, just your opinion, but you probably heard my comments before that I've never quite seen a project where you've got as many people that are inside the footprint that aren't participating. And you brought up the example of, people just don't want to be part of it, but so you've heard nothing negative about the wind farm, the people that you deal with?
I can't say that. There's people that just say, no, I don't want anything to do with it. I feel you're going to have that wherever you go.
Sure.
Not everybody can agree. That's why we have government, I guess. It's not everybody is ever going to agree on one thing.
I guess to close the loop, so everything you've heard today as far as the noise studies, as far as your concern about the roads, you feel comfortable with everything the company has said that you're going to be happy with the product that they've got planned?
I have always had good relationships with Geronimo. Messages are left. There's all the questions are always answered. When we want something, when we need to make something clear or we have a demand or a need, it's always met, always agreed upon.
And where do you live at? I
live on Section 29, right on Highway 9.
Section 29, Highway 9. Okay. Thank you. That's one of the questions that I had.
Other commissioners? Questions? Commissioner Christman?
I have a couple regarding the tax revenues that you brought up. Accused over stating tax revenues in that way over 20 years. With a power line, the taxes typically are so much per mile based on the size of the power line, and they're still that way after a number of years, even though those poles are getting older and the insulators are getting older and such, but it just stays that amount.
Yep.
Is this a decline? When someone refers to the taxes on the power line or a coal plant or something, it's so much per year. But you state this over 20 years. Is this a declining thing in that 20 years it's done or something?
No. The 20 years was just an example that if you divide that number by 20, that's the year. That's just an easy way to say it, I guess, is what I did there. If you say, for instance, a school district is 9.2, if you divide 9.2 million by 20, that is the annual tax revenue. And as far as I know, no, it does not decline.
Quite a half a million 50 years from now, too, if this thing still goes on.
As far as I know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchuk, did you have any questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Anything? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, who else would like to come up? State your name, please.
My name is Dustin Bakken, B-A-K-K-E-N.
Right, and please raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury.
I do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, commissioners, as well as everybody who's attended this meeting. I just want to briefly touch on some subject matter that we've kind of addressed already. First of all, I am the tax director as well as zoning administrator for Stutzman County. It was mentioned in Exhibit 5, I do believe you have a letter that was sent from the Stutzman County Commission unanimously supporting this project. It was mailed to Governor Jack Dalrymple's office. Reasons for supporting the project, kind of two parts, I guess. Number one, the economic development in this area. It's in a rather rural portion of the county. The city of Courtney, to be blunt, not much going on in that area. It kind of seems to be the pattern of you know, rural areas. They're just in decline. That, you know, the only industry left out there is ag, so to speak. A project like this, and I think, you know, Mr. Dick referred to it, you don't see this every day coming into these types of areas. This is a potential to pump some income back into these areas to liven them up a little bit, you know, whether it be, you know, the construction workers going to the local cafe or whatever to buy lunch instead of packing their igloo cooler every day. You know, additional revenue like that could go, you know, miles for, you know, a small establishment. Obviously, the additional money that landowners receive for their leases, it benefits them. They're more likely to turn that around into, you know, more local spending for, you know, whatever they need for their agricultural operations, whether it be, you know, in Jamestown or Courtney or Carrington or wherever they got to go to, you know, buy their supplies. The second point in that letter deals with Geronimo themselves. A little over a year ago, we were approached by Jay Hess, who is a project manager for Geronimo, just kind of getting the ball rolling as far as, you know, letting us know there's interest, you know, in a project like this. Just kind of asking questions. They had already been in the process of determining their leases and everything. And over the course of the last year, we've, you know, fully realized that they're extremely transparent in what they're doing. That is a quality that I kind of take to heart as well. My position as tax director, that's the same mentality that I try to portray, you know, when somebody walks into my office. If I'm going to sit behind my desk and, you know, be secretive about anything, I'm the tax man. People don't like me to begin with. If I can make more friends than enemies, I'm ahead of the game. So if I want to lay everything out on the table the way it is, nobody's glaring at me, is there? I want to just lay out everything out on the table and tell it exactly how it is. I don't want to be, you know, sleight of hand anything. And that's kind of, Stutzman County actually is in the final processes of adopting a crew housing ordinance too. That's the same mentality we've, you know, gone through this whole process with as well. Keep the public informed. Let their input, you know, direct you in the progress that you're making. Obviously, from the testimonies and everything that we've heard today, I think Geronimo has covered a lot of their bases. Obviously, it's a large-scale project. There's going to be some issues that we, you know, still have to, you know, iron out, as Commissioner Kalk referred to, whether it be in working committees or whatnot. But I guess I would, again, just reiterate that Stutzman County fully supports this project. No doubt these are exciting times for the state of North Dakota, Stutzman County as well. And if I might, just in closing, my own personal experience here, obviously we've known this project has been in the works for a while. And I, every morning when I take my daughter to school, we always play a game of I Spy, whatever else, you know, things that five-year-olds like to do. One morning, she picked an object out of the neighbor's yard, and she didn't know what it was. I said, "That's a windmill." I said, "We might be getting 135 windmills in, you know, in Stutzman County where you live." She knows where we live. And she envisioned 135 of these little six-foot windmills, you know, wherever else. That was her idea of a windmill. Last Wednesday, we're on our way out to the western part of the state to visit some in-laws. It's about 8 o'clock, so, you know, the sun's, you know, going down. And we get past New Salem, and she's got her headphones on watching her movie, and she yells, just, you know, piercing, "Daddy, look, windmills!" And she's looking off at the Bison Wind Project. Off in the horizon, you can see the turbines clear as day. And, you know, when you look out and see those turbines against the horizon and everything, it was a, you know, there's some sort of a majestic quality to that. And to think that, you know, my daughter, who's 5 years old, is noticing, you know, structures like that and the way that they kind of decorate the landscape of the state, that those projects are going to be there, you know, when she's my age or beyond. And I think that a wind project like this is definitely has its place in the future.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Bachman?
No, I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Mr. Armstrong?
Commissioners.
Commissioner Falk, any questions?
Just thank you for your testimony. You're not part of that Bachman family with that oil play, are you?
No, great Uncle Henry hasn't sent me a check yet.
All right. Well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Commissioner Christman? Commissioner Dorcher?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. There were a couple other hands up. Come on up.
Good afternoon. My name is Katie Anderson. I'm the mayor of Jamestown.
All right. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
All right. Thank you.
As I mentioned, my name is Katie Anderson. I'm the mayor of Jamestown. And as the mayor, I also serve on the county zoning board as the city's one of the city's representatives on the county zoning board. And we've spent a lot of time from the zoning board's perspective on this wind farm project, as well as looking at our wind ordinance in general. And as the representative of 70% of the population of Stetson County, actually a little over 70% of the population of Stetson County lives within the city limits of Jamestown, we are very excited for the positive economic impact that's happening for our area, and this project being one of them. One of the things that we really like to support from economic development is the diversification of our economy. And to see just another industry move in that we currently don't have into our region, I think is a positive thing, as well as the calculable numbers that are the tax impact and the job impact. We also like to see the diversification as well. And so I wanted to make sure that the city said that through its representation on the county zoning board that we've also been impressed with the work that Geronimo has done, the communication that they provided to our representative entities, and that we understand that the city of Jamestown, though we weren't part of the site of the project, will receive some sort of positive economic impact from all the things that happen around us in the region. I also wanted to mention that I also serve on the Airport Authority Board, and so when I nodded earlier to Commissioner Kalk's question about whether UND utilizes the Jamestown Regional Airport, I did confirm that they do use the Jamestown Regional Airport to the extent of about 15 to 20 operations per day. So an operation would be a takeoff or a landing. And so that would be something that you could use that information if you have some further questions for your working sessions. And our regional airport manager, Matthew Leitner, would be happy to provide you with additional information as well. I confirmed with an email with him during the hearing. If you have any other questions, otherwise we just want to go on record in support.
Ms. Smith, any questions?
No, I don't have any.
How about Mr. Armstrong?
Nothing.
Commissioner Paul?
You.
I figured.
Thank you, Mayor. Just for full disclosure, I've known Mayor Katie for quite a while. We've had a lot of discussions about your gas to fertilizer plant out there, so I've come to know what you do here and appreciate the work of Jamestown, because you have a lot of good things that you're spearheading. And with that, I trust your opinion, not that I don't trust the other opinions, but I feel like I can really drill down a little bit some of the questions. I mean, you've been sitting here all day, and I think you got probably the gist of the big concern that I have about a project where we've got, you know, half dozen or so folks inside the scope. You know, what are your thoughts about that? Should we just look at it and say, hey, they've been given their chance and roll forward, or, I mean, we go back and talk to them again? I mean, you've lived this a lot closer than I have.
Well, I can tell you with confidence that I didn't hear anything negative about the Geronimo Energy project throughout the process of working on the zoning ordinance itself, and there's a lot of public hearings involved with that. I've also invited Geronimo Wynn to come speak at some of our service club organizations. I'm involved with the Rotary Club, and so Jay came and made a great presentation to our Rotary Club, which represents a lot of good leadership in Jamestown. Again, the reactions were very positive, with maybe the exception of one of of our school board members who was very jealous that the Courtney School District is going to be receiving some of the tax dollars and not the Jamestown School District, but all in good heart they were saying those things. So really I think it's been, they've been very positive and upfront in the community, and I think what they're going to provide to you in the late filed exhibit will help explain those individual circumstances. And I just know from some of the experiences we're doing with contacting landowners for our land use and transportation plans that are going on around the city of Jamestown, often the obstacle is simply making contact with the person and being able to talk to the decision makers. We have a lot of parcels around the city of Jamestown, for example, that are owned by 16 to 20 family members. In order to be able to get a decision on how they're going to approve just an easement for a road to go through for the city or something like that can be an extremely time-consuming process. And I'm assuming that you'll get some evidence that will say the same thing about some of the parcels that were located in this, is that there are obstacles that we don't necessarily think are not in support of the Courtney Wind Farm project, but are something that is because of the makeup of the particular landowners. And in this area, I think that's very common.
Okay. And then, Mayor, are you comfortable with the noise study that's been submitted and your interaction with on the noise?
Well, I think we felt like the decibel levels was a standard that we felt comfortable with in the ordinance itself. And then just, I didn't know what decibel levels really meant. And so just a couple quick like Google search type things to try and understand what does 40 decibels mean? What does 60 decibels mean? And the 50 decibels, I think, was the equivalent to a refrigerator running. And to me, I thought to myself, okay, if that's the equivalent of a refrigerator running or something like that, then that would be something that would be acceptable. I know noise is something that's really the interpretation of the person who hears it, and we run into that often in the city of Jamestown. We just had the 4th of July, and so Jamestown's one of the places that we allow fireworks to be shot off during this time of the year, and so we get a lot of noise complaints from that. Also from some of our geothermal users in town, they have generators that create some noise. And so from the city's law enforcement perspective, we have some experience with the complaints that come in from noise, so I think it's a big concern. I feel like the threshold was conservative that was used in the ordinance, and that's from my non-expert. I have no acoustic engineering experience, just telling you what I think from trying to figure out what those decibel levels mean.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Anything else? Commissioner Chrisman?
No questions. I just want to say, though, that having worked with the mayor of Jamestown, commissioner, before that as a legislator, as well as the legislative team from around here, the District 12 legislators in Jamestown, the District 29 legislators in the surrounding area. Folks down here are lucky to have the people representing you that you have. They're some of the, I think, premier leaders in North Dakota that are working to make sure that good things happen, that bad things don't happen. There's all different perspectives, all different ways of going about that. Everybody has their own roles in it. But the people of this area are lucky to have the leadership they have.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Sure. Just one follow-up question to Commissioner Cox. But So we're hearing that from both you and Lee that some of these landowner issues are people that are kind of absentee and gone and don't want to deal. But I'm looking again on this map, and at least five of them are residences, where there's been areas specifically carved out. So it's just surprising to me that these people haven't showed up anywhere along the way complaining about this.
And I don't know the specifics so I'm probably not the person to answer your question, but just in the quick little conversations that we were having while you have been having this hearing, the Geronimo representatives have said, well, we're going to line out why these things are so that you have a better, more case-by-case understanding of what contacts were made and why somebody might be, it could be everything from a title issue through absentee. And we did not hear anything specific about the project as we went through many public meetings.
No buzz, no, just like...
No, you know, I will tell you that I think there was some, and I don't remember the specifics of it, but there were some concerns from the different townships that are involved regarding their zoning. And so maybe I should tell you that, Sesame County has 64 townships. 62 of them are organized, which I think is perhaps uncommon in the state of North Dakota that we have that many organized townships. And 15 of those organized townships exercise their own zoning authorities. And so those townships that exercise their own zoning authorities would not have been underneath Sesame County's wind ordinance unless they voluntarily accepted it. And so that's one of the things that we're working with as we do some other zoning ordinances for the county, is that we want to make sure that those townships that are exercising their own zoning authority are happy with the ordinance and want to voluntarily adopt it so we can have consistency across the county for different projects. And that's everything from wind to feedlots to crew camps. And so we want to have some consistency across the townships for zoning. And we also want to be able to have the place where we can have the enforcement tools available. So a township itself may not have the enforcement tools for a zoning ordinance, and so this way they have the resources of the county. And so we did have some concerns that came up from some of the individual townships for making sure that the protections for their roads, I think, were the biggest concerns that came up. And that would have been the only concerns that we had in there. And they wanted the road documentation to be taken care of, as they have the responsibility for their township roads, and they want to make sure that that was part of the ordinance. So there was maybe a handful of concerns there, and those are negative impacts from any type of economic development coming in. You're going to have some traffic and some road impacts that you're going to deal with. And one of the things that we wanted to make sure was the big protection in that ordinance was for the documentation of the roads prior to the project, during the project, and following it, so that there's good protections for those political subdivisions that are affected. So that's both the county and the township.
Well, kudos to you guys for all your zoning work and your leadership on that, because it is really helpful on a statewide basis to know what the locals think, because you guys have to live with this stuff. So we want to be doing what's right for you.
Thank you.
Supporting that. So thanks for taking time to be here all day.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, commissioners? Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Was there another person or persons who wanted to come forward?
Yeah. I wasn't here earlier to raise my hand. Can I still?
Yes, you can. You can still come on. Okay, I'll take a quick check of the recorder here. Thank you, Mr. Sheldon. All right, and what is your name, sir?
Jeffrey Burke Mitchell.
Okay, please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
Sure do.
Go ahead.
My family has farmed in this area. They came here in 1905, and been farming, ranching here. We covet our land better than anything. We're pretty fussy how it looks, how it is. It was a big decision for us to go this way. I looked at other wind farms to the east. I didn't think it looked so bad. Did a nice clean job, environmentally friendly, and we couldn't see where we'd be compromising ourselves going in on this project. I live right along Highway 20 and 9, and my other farm's up here on the CP rail. There's all kinds of noise and stuff with all that, and we don't make any money on that. And we're adding value to our farm, knowing full well what's going to happen. I don't see the bad part about this at all. We don't have the luxury of oil and gas here, and the whole host of headaches with that. To me, this has less than oil and gas. And oil and gas is a finite thing. Probably not in my lifetime or maybe in my kids, but down the road, wind, solar, the rest of these products are going to have to come online because there will not be enough to go around. And I can't imagine going without electricity. It's the cheapest
thing we have at our home to do work. So I think this is an investment in the future. And we signed up on it. We have more land that didn't get into it. I wished we could have. Along with that, there was other people who wanted to get on the project, but this was the size that was designed. People who wanted to get in weren't able to. And I'll address this the same way. There's some of this land next door to me that is not in this, and they chose not to. We were all offered the same deal, and they chose not to. Any questions you have for me?
Ms. Smith, any questions?
No, I don't think
so. Mr. Armstrong.
Could you identify what land is yours?
I live in Section 1. And I have another farm up on the north side in 26, up next to the CP rail. I don't know if 26 is in it, but part of that is in it. There's another building site up there.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Commissioner Call.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey, for your testimony. So basically, everything that you've seen with this project, as far as noise, as far as shadow, as far as roads, you're comfortable with the plan that the company's laid out?
Yes.
If there's one concern that you might have going forward, what would that be?
I really can't think of anything. The only thing that might come is if the efficiencies get better. They may want to update these, make a bigger meg up top, because you look at how the efficiencies have gotten better with everything over time. To me, this could produce more on the same pads, if that's 20 years down the road. I hope my kids look at this the right way to make the money and not change it.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Sir?
Hold on just a moment. Do we have a couple?
I'm sorry.
Christmas. You're comfortable with the thought that you might have to do one calls and get flags put out before you soil test?
I have no problem. We do that now. That's just, I have construction equipment, and you call before, no matter what you're doing.
Good answer.
Because there's stuff put there before I knew what was going on. I was just a kid. And that's just good business. That's the way it is.
Because we're getting some screaming from some ag producers about wanting exclusion from that, the soil testing, because they don't know when the guy's coming or the gal is coming to do their soil testing.
You know what? All kidding aside, farmers need to man up a little bit. When that's mapped out, get it on your maps, and you'll know. You only got to do it once. And if you can't do that, that's just part of doing business.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you. Hold on.
I'm always in a sweat. All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, I believe there was someone else. All right.
Got buditis.
Probably not alone. And your name, sir?
Rod Roldson.
Roldson,
R-O-A-L-D-S-O-N.
Okay, and you've got your right hand up. You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
I hope that I'm not viewed upon as being a fly in the ointment, but I reside in Section 11, northwest quarter of Section 11, and I'm one of those who did not sign. My wife and her family, my wife was born on that quarter, and it has been kept through the family through all the years. We purchased the quarter from my in-laws about 20 some years ago, and to give you some history, I taught school for 35 years in the Jamestown public school system. And I thought that I would use that as extra income because I didn't feel I was, making enough. So I thought I'd get into some farming and help out with the economy, but my wife also lived in Jamestown. She was Farmers Union for 38 years. I taught school here for 35 years, and I do know the noise in Jamestown. I lived up on Mill Hill next to Newman Science and Titan Manufacturing. We did not sign up for a whole different reason. The economic value of the wind tower meant nothing to us. We're kind of romanticists. I'm 70, my wife is 70. We worked real hard growing up, and we took our life savings and spent, I really don't want to tell you how much we spent on a home on the farm, and we want the farm to stay in the family forever, so we put it into a trust. Our whole south wall is glass. It's all windows. And to the west of us, we have windows. And we're going to have a tower that is looking right into our glass vision. We have a beautiful view. And we don't object to the project at all. In fact, I think, like the rest of the people that testified, it's a great opportunity for Courtney and for the farmers who aren't making it, give them some added income to help their life be better. But we don't look at it as economic value. We look at it as a romantic value. We want the land that we live on to stay original. We don't want it to, I wouldn't say be destroyed, but there just isn't enough room on that quarter of land for us to live and to maintain towers. We have gobboons of deer on our quarter. We have many turkeys. In fact, the turkeys roost in a farmstead that's vacant that's going to be awful close to a tower. And this is the first time that we had any idea where the towers were going to be located. We were never asked to participate in the decision as to where the towers would go. This is the first vision that I have seen of these towers. And our association with the project and the company in Minnesota has been good. I received two letters and I refused both letters. And Jay came and talked to us. And he is a tremendous young man. And I hope that the company hangs on to him, because he is a people's person. And I really respected him when he came to talk to me. And he respected my vision. And my vision was, I don't want to call the wind towers a blight, but it is a distraction to us, because we came from a congested area with lots of noise, and we moved out there, and the noise we have are doves, meadowlarks, and that type of thing. And we can sit in our backyard in the patio and listen to the birds chirp in the morning at 6 o'clock in the evening. And it's absolutely tremendous. There are only two towers, and I would express my opinion. There's only two towers that I think probably would really upset us, and that would be Tower 28 and 19, or 119 and 28. 119 from the standpoint that it is directly northwest of us. We have up to 70 mile an hour winds, and I don't suppose those towers work at 70 miles an hour, but if there's a wind driven behind them, the refrigerator kicking in the, during the night when I'm sleeping will wake me up. And our mayor said that that it is equated to a refrigerator kicking in. So 119 is as far as vision goes, it's no problem. I'm concerned about the noise, the 50 decibels or 48 or whatever is going to impact. It is rather close. It's almost directly northwest of us. 128, I'm concerned. I can't understand why it would be located so close to the cemetery. And I don't know, I'm sure that probably the distance from the cemetery to the tower is within the parameter of the limitation, the distance. But I'm quite surprised that there'd be a tower. We have several relatives down there, and I'm sure they wouldn't be concerned about the noise, but we would. And also 128 is directly, almost directly in front of our big south end piece of glass on our house, and we're going to be looking right at it. I only wish that we could, there could be some reconsideration on the location of those two. Not that they be eliminated, but maybe moved a little bit so that when the wind comes from the northwest, it'll move the noise maybe another direction. And also the it would be nice not to have 128 in our picture window. Other than that, I'm for the project. I think it's great. I truly admire and respect the men who are willing to take a chance on this project. And they're good friends and neighbors, and my wife went to school with them. In fact, I had one as a student. Lee Dick was a student of mine, and I taught marketing for 35 years, so I'm real proud of him. Other than that, I guess I'm not complaining about the project. I only wish that we would have been more involved maybe in the close ones in proximity to our property. And I guess we feel hopeless. We feel like it's already set, it's stamped, and there isn't a damn thing we can do about it. But I hope that maybe somebody would at least be concerned about how we feel and how it affects our life. We put the farm into a trust. It'll be in that trust for 99 years past our youngest grandchild. And that's how we feel about that land. It's not a money maker. It's a place to enjoy life, and we want to continue to enjoy that life.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Do you have any questions for Mr. Rolton?
Rolton, yeah.
I think my only question is, would you be willing to talk with Geronimo more about your concerns?
I would be willing to talk about it more, but I will not change my mind.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I definitely, it's a love of life rather than a jingle in the pocketbook.
Sure. Yeah, and I should have been clearer, and I didn't mean about leasing. I meant about your concerns about a couple of the turbines that you...
Yeah, there's only two that really... And I didn't know they existed until today. And I probably wouldn't even got up here except I, you know, I just had to let you feel or understand how we felt as to why we didn't sign up. Mm-hmm. We're not... Hey, we love our neighbors, and we wish them well and hope they continue to do well. And but we would like to be considered in our feelings as well.
All right, sure.
Okay.
I don't have any other questions.
Again, I want to say Jay is a hell of a good guy.
Mr. Rolton, I just want to make sure, because we're on the record here, I think we all know which house you're talking about, but if I'm not mistaken, your house B on
Exhibit
B, 4.
And these are the two towers that And I'm really surprised that a tower would go in right behind the cemetery. I just don't understand that.
Okay, any questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Paul.
Thank you, Rod, right?
Yeah.
Thank you for your testimony. In my opening comments, I talked about the legislature and the wisdom of making sure the commission comes to the community most affected so we can hear from the landowners. And, you know, you're the reason we're here today. You expect that the company is going to say they've got a good project. That's to be expected. We want to hear the concerns of the person that's going to have to live with this forever. So thanks for coming out, and thanks for saying your piece. So am I to understand, though, your candid testimony that there's nothing that could happen for you to ever lease this land, to let them lease on it?
No, I am absolutely not interested. We have an oasis in that quarter.
But if you leased it to the company and they weren't going to build anything on your property, that's still not...
I wouldn't take the chance.
Fair enough.
I just, once you give up your legal rights, you're at the mercy of whatever they decide to do with that right, and there's no room for a road or a tower or...
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I believe Mr. Armstrong asked you, but your particular concern of towers is tower 128 to the northwest of your place.
And 119.
And 119 to the southwest.
Yeah.
So were you here when the company talked about they've yet to decide what turbine, and they could have as few as 100 turbine locations? Because right now
I did not know how many towers.
Well, the way that the company pitched our piece today was they have a max of 133 towers, if I'm understanding this correct, and it could be as low as 100 towers. And so if those towers, I mean, it's well within the commission's jurisdiction to say those two towers aren't approved. We've done that before numerous times. And so I don't think by any means that it's a lost cause. But I would say if you wouldn't have come here today and said your piece, you never know what might happen.
I would feel real bad for those people who have the towers because they're good friends.
But can't have it both ways.
But, yes, I mean, I consider them friends.
Which is more important to you, your friends having the towers or you having the view shed?
They don't have to live in my house. You know, and we spent thousands, we spent thousands of dollars on a house, you know.
No, I'm serious. Yeah. I'm asking you, this is your chance. I have to make a decision.
Yeah. I noticed that the one by the cemetery is the study hasn't been done on that one yet? There's a green dot on it.
Do you know what the number is?
128.
128.
Yeah, it has a green dot on it, and that's according to the scale over there, it says that it hasn't been studied, the habitat of the area.
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep order here. Commissioner Kalk has a question.
Hang with us a little bit longer, fellas.
Okay.
But to clarify, though, those two towers are the ones that you're most concerned about. So as the other tower locations, the ones directly to your east, the ones...
I think that the trees that we have planted are tall enough to where those two towers on Jeff's quarter, we shouldn't, you know, maybe upstairs, it's an A-frame with a loft up there, maybe upstairs you might get this flutter, but I don't think that we'll even see those.
But your basic concern is just those two?
Just those two.
Okay, and then I know you can't speak for your neighbor to the north, but chances are you talked to the neighbor.
Yes, we have.
And I understand it may be hearsay from Molly's viewpoint, but Your opinion of why your neighbor didn't sign to the north?
Probably for the same reason.
Okay.
That's been in their family for three or four generations. And
fair enough.
They're, even though they don't live there now, but...
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep.
Hold on.
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Christman, do you have a question?
Just to be clear, you're in the northwest of Section 11.
Northwest quarter of Section 11.
So, you know, it's kind of an obvious big rectangle out of here, the west half of 11 and the west half of 2.
Right.
Is the southwest of 11 and the west half of 2, is that also members of your wife's family, or is this different?
No. The short-tail relatives, but...
Okay.
the one to the south, Section 11, the southwest quarter of Section 11 is a Shirtail relative, and also across the road there, related.
I have nothing other. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Thank you, Rod, for coming, and your wife as well. And
I'm sorry. My wife is Jan.
Appreciate you guys showing up and saying your piece. And my only comment would be I would hope that the company would work with you and the other folks to move the towers so perhaps they can get out of your view.
I would hope that those gentlemen do not lose the right to those towers. But I, you know, we have our feelings too, and they're different.
Fair enough. You get to have that in our country.
Any other questions?
I do have Ms.
Smith?
One question. So we were talking a little bit. You said you mentioned the one direction that you had some trees that block the view of the tower.
To the east of our home, the angle and the height of the trees, I don't know. And then I'm guessing that it probably we won't be bothered by it.
I was just thinking if, to the other side, talking about some sort of compromise in dealing with the towers that are existing, wanting the neighbors to have them there, if there were some sort of measure like planting trees or some other mitigation type measure that would work.
We're at the legal distance from the center of the road to the house, and there's no place between. There's no room other than our, frankly, our yard.
So it couldn't be on your yard, but
no, it would have to be across. Mark is signed up. Mark Falk is signed up. He lives in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Okay.
And but I see that there's no towers planned there. I'm not complaining, but because that would be right in our lap. But.
Perhaps this kind of negotiation could take place following the hearing.
Yep, and what I was thinking is we would provide, because the commissioners are interested in update when we filed the late filed exhibit that we're filing on all of these parcels, we would include the discussions and if there's any.
Well, I think it's pretty clear the commissioners were communicating that perhaps the company needs to go back to some of these landowners. So I think that can take place. I don't think this is the appropriate place to get into a lot of negotiating.
Yeah, we have no intention of doing it on the record.
All right.
Yeah, and we're not environmentalists or anything like that. We're just plain people who want to live peacefully the rest of our life.
I have nothing further.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Was there anyone else? Who had planned or who now has decided that they want to come forward? Okay, seeing no further hands.
At the risk of a never-ending saga, I would like to talk to Patrick again after this last round.
Mr. Smith.
Patrick.
All right. Mr. Smith, do you want to? But I think we need to take.
Just to make sure we have the right witness.
It's going to be based on the decision timeline of 133 turbines to 100 turbines. And if we can accelerate that decision point. 138 here, right?
Okay, Mr. Smith, do you want to come forward? This takes more than 5 minutes, we're going to have to take.
Okay, very well. I'll be quick.
All right, Mr. Smith, you're still under oath.
Just very quickly, Mr. Smith, thank you for all your work today and all the time. But we just did a testimony about those two turbines. But it really kind of honed in what we're talking about this morning, that there's a lot of abnormal things going on here with the locations. But if the 100 turbine footprint takes away some of these problems, that the 133 would be, that would be a lot easier, I think, to move forward. And you don't think that you can have that decision until September?
Typically, in my experience, that contract negotiation takes the longest. It doesn't mean that we won't be spending time with Mr. Ralston to go over all sorts of options.
The if the commission held off on a decision, I'm just speaking for myself, not for my colleagues, until you reach that decision, would that throw off your timeline?
Yes, because we'd be arranging a number of other a number of other financial aspects of the project, and the certificate of site compatibility will be very important.
Okay, then let me wrap it up then. So you'll have to make a decision on which turbine is the best for you to buy. But then when you look at these dots on our map here, could you submit to us that if you end up going to 100 locations, have you picked out the 100 dots that you put the 2 megs on? Or will you have to retool the whole thing? Because this is roughly, this is for the 133, right? Or 136.
Yeah, the way that we designed it, we could use any of those positions for any of the turbine models. And
what I'm getting at is there's potentially 36 people here that aren't going to have a turbine if you go to 100 turbines.
That's correct.
So is there any way that you can get to us just a matrix that if we go 136, here's our locations. If we go 100, here's our locations. And then don't have to make that decision, but it certainly helps us a little bit.
Yeah, I think we can produce produce sort of a table and maybe a map of the different scenarios that we're looking at the time, you know, and those scenarios might change. That would be the only caveat that I need to place on it. So that, you know, it would be sort of a snapshot of what we're seeing the project as right now. But
all right, thank you.
Yeah.
Jerry's up.
Jerry, Mr. Lean.
How many turbine locations are there on this diagram? I see a number of 140. Is that?
Some of the turbine numbering has gotten off as we've deleted turbines. We don't renumber each time we delete a turbine position because it gets confusing when we have other documentation associated. There's 136 on the map.
So there's 133 if you go with the smaller turbine?
That's correct.
So you've got three alternates in there now?
Right now, yeah.
Okay.
Your Honor, I forgot my question. The last.
Commissioner Call?
I can't. If a landowner does not have a turbine, but they're still part of the leased area, how much does that decrease the payment for that landowner? They're still going to get something if they lose a turbine, but is it a big difference?
I just caution you not to disclose anything that you're not supposed to disclose.
That was sort of what I'm struggling with, is that some of that information is not public, but I think that our turbine payment is fair for the entire line.
But it's safe to say that as long as someone is participating, even if they would lose a turbine, they still have revenue coming to them.
Yes, they
it's
will
like
still
if
get.
If we have a different scenario where you lose a turbine, you lose everything.
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hold on. Other commissioners.
I don't have a question, just a statement as important to my decision, more important to my decision than what Mr. Kalk has asked for, is the negotiation that you're going to have with Mr. Rolson. Hoping that you can come to some resolution on moving the towers and concern it to him.
Yes, and we'll make that part of our late filed exhibit.
Thank you. Commissioner Chrisman.
Nothing further.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, do you want any other witnesses involved?
Wildlife guy was pretty good.
Are there any caterers in the audience?
I should ask Ms. Smith, do you want to recall any further witnesses?
I don't believe so.
Mr. Armstrong, any other questions?
No, Your Honor. Just, I assume wrapping up that the company will submit proposed findings.
We're
going
to get to that in just a second here. Okay, we're ready to close here. Does the commission want briefs and or proposed findings?
Proposed findings at this time.
Proposed findings. All right, then instruct the Courtney Wind Farm to submit proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law for the commissioner's considerations. And Mr. Armstrong, do you have a date by which you want those?
No, because I think it's dependent upon when they get the late filed exhibits submitted. So
that's what I was going to propose, that we would submit those at the same time as the late filed exhibits.
That's That's fine.
All right.
Do you want to set any particular time frame?
I don't think we can because the LAPEL exhibits aren't in existence yet, at least some of them, and I don't think there's a definite date for when they will be.
She was proposing that they be filed at the same time as the findings.
Oh, that's fine. But the late filed, you know, Schiphol letters and such may be, you know, a couple months, so we don't, I mean, it's hard to set a date when we don't know
when
they
will. Yeah, we hope that it's within the next 30 days, but we can't control Schiphol, so it would be nice to leave the flexibility and just know that they would come in all at the same time.
All right. We'll leave that open then and get it in as soon as you can. How's that?
We will.
All right. Is there anything else to bring to the attention of the commission, Ms. Smith?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
All right.
Your Honor, there's a member of the public.
Mr. Dick?
I just got one more thing. You guys were talking about the homes surrounding the area that were not signed up. A lot of them places, I can look at two of them right now, are landowners that have land signed up. Their farm is just outside of the footprint.
I believe the company is going to be providing that in the late filed exhibit.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Before I formally close the hearing, I'm going to ask commissioners if they have any closing comments. Commissioner Paul?
Thank you. Just thank everyone for your patience. It's very important that you all come and tell us what you think, because we make better decisions if we have better information. For the company, it sounds like September is when all things are going to converge. So I think what we'll do is we'll go back for our next commission meeting. We will actually schedule a work session sometime in mid to late September, because our schedule fills up pretty quick. So we'll get it in the schedule. It'll be on you to get that information to us so we can proceed accordingly. So thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman.
Just a few comments, because this is my first wind farm one hearing like this. And so I appreciate the people coming that came. I'm surprised always that more people don't when their view shed and everything else in their neighborhood is impacted by it. First of all, this is better, seems like better organized and planned than what I initially expected. And so I want to commend the company on the work that they've done. However, the negative of it is getting back to that 10-year plan. I brought it up before. I'd just like to explain a little bit so people understand what we're talking about. In state law, we have a siting act. It requires every utility that owns or operates or plans within the next 10 years to own, operate, or start construction on a facility shall annually develop a 10-year plan. Later on, it goes into the reasoning, a description of upon receipt of the 10-year plans, the commission can assess the impact of developments proposed within the state to ensure that energy conversion facilities and transmission facilities will be sited in an orderly manner. And I want people to realize, as much of a economic development promoter as I am, our job isn't necessarily economic development per se. We need to be looking out for making sure that in the area of electricity, like we're talking about here today, that North Dakota consumers continue to have dependable and affordable power. And so if a wind farm is built, something else needs to be available to back it up for when the wind isn't blowing. And you know, we only want utilities to construct the amount that's necessary, because if they overconstruct and things are just sitting idly by, depreciating and not being used because there's not demand for the power, then it just drives up our rates and life isn't any better. So we have a lot of things to calculate into all the different applications that are out there, including the number of wind farm applications around the state, to make sure that our whole energy system is dependable and affordable, not just for where we can get someone to come in and spend some money. And so a lot of considerations that we have to take into consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchik, closing?
Well, I had a 20-minute speech of closing comments prepared, but I'm going to skip that. Thank you very much. I have no closing comments.
All right, thank you. Then that will conclude the hearing today, and I'm going to close this hearing, noting the correct time is 3:50 p.m. Central Time. The hearing is closed.
Your Honor.